The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To get on board, send Joanne an email in studio101@gmail.com. And now, your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome everyone to Down the Garden Path, where every Monday night we talk about and discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes, as well as we have interesting topics and guests that share the evening with us so that we can talk about more things happening in the landscape world. And I'm very happy to have author and landscape designer Jan Johnson back with us. She was here a few weeks ago, so we're doing part two so that we could focus on her book, Heaven is a Garden. So I hope that if anyone out there, our listeners, have questions for Jan, that they will please send them in to instudio101@gmail.com. So let me give you a short little bio about Jan before I introduce her onto the show. Jan Johnson is a highly regarded landscape designer, author, and teacher with a passion for plants and beautiful gardens. In her book, Heaven is a Garden, Designing Serene Outdoor Spaces for Inspiration and Reflection, she draws on ancient traditions and modern trends to reveal the deep connection between the natural world and our emotions. An advocate of the transformational power of nature upon our well-being, she is an award-winning instructor at the New York Botanical Gardens, and writes the popular blog Serenity in the Garden. She is the co-principal of the design-build firm Johnson Landscape and Pools in Westchester County, New York, and her Facebook page is Heaven is a Garden. Welcome back to the show, Jan.
Hi there, Joanne.
Thank you for coming back. I know your first visit on the show, we talked all about your background and all your wonderful experience teaching and writing. And I'm really looking forward to further discussing and focusing on your book, Heaven is a Garden, tonight.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks so much.
Excellent. So I'm hoping, like I said, that our listeners will send in some questions for you.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. So that would be good, that opportunity to chat or, you know, just find out what you're thinking. But so Heaven is a Garden, you wrote it in...
It was published in 2014.
2014. Okay.
But I spent about 4 years prior to that writing the book.
Wow.
Yes.
It must have been hard to carve out time between the designing.
I work full time. And so I would get up at 5 in the morning every day and I would write. And it was something I had to do. It was I wanted to share all these things that I've put together through the years because I've been doing this for over 40 years, landscape design and planning, and I really wanted to share it. And I said, well, you know, you just have to make the time to do it, and that's what I did.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the title? What made you choose that as a title?
Well, Heaven is a Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, for the during the whole time that I was writing it, I was calling it Tranquility by Design.
Oh, which is also very cool.
Yeah, it's a great title, right?
Yeah.
But, you know... tranquility is, it's a hard word, and it's, you know, it's a long word, and it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't grab you. And my wonderful publisher at St. Lynn's Press, Paul Kelly, he said, he very kind of quietly suggested, he said, well, I have another idea for a title. And he said, what do you think about Heaven is a Garden? And the minute he said the name, I said, that's it.
Oh, wonderful.
And one of the reasons I like it is because I just like the fact that you can get certain words in a title. And like, how often can you get the word heaven into a title of a book, you know? So I grabbed onto it. I thought that was the perfect description for what I was trying to do.
Wonderful, especially with, you know, then the subtitle of Serene Outdoor Spaces for Inspiration and Reflection. You know, I think it's very suitable.
Yeah, and it really does grab my intention, what I was aiming to convey.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I have a quote from the book that I think is one of my favorite. You did a wonderful description of the book, so I'm just going to read you your own quote.
Oh, good.
I'm quoting Jan from her book. Whether you are an individual intending to create a beautiful backyard garden, a landscape architect or designer wishing to expand your ideas for your clients, or someone who is just thinking about designing a dream garden, this book will give you insights to help you create a glorious outdoor space perfect for inspiration and reflection. And I think that just sums up the book. It really does.
Great. Yeah, it was for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to get too in-depth, but I didn't want to skim the surface too much. I wanted every paragraph to have something of value. Every paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
So I culled and edited and got it to the point where I felt there wasn't too much extraneous, you know, too many words.
Yeah. Well, because photos, too. It's very, there's a lot of photos.
Yeah.
And
they're all my photos.
Wonderful.
Because I've been collecting all these photos over the years.
Yeah. Are you really good at going back to gardens and visiting them?
You know, it's funny. At first, I just took them. I wasn't very strategic when I started my company. I started my company 35 years ago.
Wow.
And I wasn't. I just wanted to make beautiful outdoor spaces that made people feel good. That's basically what I do, is like how to make feel-good gardens. And I never bothered to take before photos when I first started. I was too anxious just to fix them up. Of course, now in my later years, I realized that the before photos are everything.
Yeah.
You need everybody out there. Take, even if it's a tiny little strip in front of your house, take the before photo, because it's just, you realize when it's all done what transformation occurred.
Yes, because, and then it's the follow-up, because I always say that too, the right after looks okay, but really a couple years later, that's when the garden comes into its own.
It takes 3 years.
3 years, yes.
It takes 3 years, and then you come back and you go, wow.
What a difference. What inspires, so you're sharing all of these things with us. What inspires you in a garden?
Boy.
I know. It's big.
That's a great question, Joanne. What inspires me? Well, the first thing that inspires me is the natural environment. So, for example, if a place has a magnificent rock outcrop, or if the landforms are pretty nice, or if there's this old gnarled apple tree, or something like that, that's what grabs me.
Mm.
You know, it's like, because it's all about nature, after
right.
all. You know, we're just a pale imitation of what nature does. And I would say that, number one, inspires me, and especially the rocks.
Yeah.
Because the rocks are so ever-present and timeless. I think if I go to a place with the most beautiful rock outcrops, I think I really swoon.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it becomes all about making them, like, kind of showcasing the rocks.
Oh, I think so,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, we tend to overlook them.
Mm.
But, you know, they've been there for eons.
Yeah.
We come and go, the plants come and go, but They're there. I think I feel there's a lot of rock lovers out there, I'm sure, who know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there are no rocks on the landscape, that is something that you feel strongly about adding.
Well, I don't know, you know, because you let the land tell you what to do. Like, if it's a place where it just doesn't happen to be rocks, would that be kind of silly, maybe, to add them? If it's a, you know, if it's a place where prairie or meadow or something else is more appropriate.
Okay.
I follow the natural environment surroundings.
Okay.
I really do. I feel like in one part of my book I talk about that, about trying to stay in tune with the place.
Mm-hmm.
And not try to become too artificial about the whole thing.
Wow, because otherwise it could be forced. Yeah, I mean, I could see that, because if you're introducing things, then maybe it can be come off a little forced.
Yeah, exactly. That they just don't harmonize that well. Now, of course, if you're a really good designer, you can kind of introduce things that are not of the area, but for some reason it still works beautifully. I'm not a real vigilante when it comes to that. I say, okay, there's moderation in all things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Buddha said, you go the middle way.
Yeah.
I'm definitely into the middle way.
And sometimes do your clients kind of leave it up to you? Do you really find that you are working with what your client's vision is?
Well, you know, because we are working for a person who owns the property and lives there, you want them to wake up every morning, look outside and go, oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And if that particular client loves well-pruned hedges and beautiful annual flowers, that's what I will do.
Because
I want them to love where they live.
Yeah.
Now, I will try to maintain as much native material and native plants as I possibly can, but I still might introduce other plants that are not native. And then if somebody else is a little bit more into, like, I have one client who loves Japanese aesthetic, so I'm free to do any kind of Japanese approach, Japanese style,
right,
you know, that I might
want to
do. So I guess I kind of go in tune with the client and what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we all, even, you know, you too, we all have our own particular style. Mine is, as I describe in the book, a little bit more flowing, like gentle curves, because I find that people relax when there's gentle curves, whether it's a bed, a walkway, a wall, a step.
Yeah.
I find people relax more when it's gently curving rather than maybe straight lines everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. You talk in your book about gardens. Speaking of relaxing, you do talk about the garden, why gardens make us feel so relaxed. Like, if it's done well, it should make us feel relaxed, right?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That you go outside and you immediately just feel like, it's like what I say, the reason I got into this in the very beginning, I probably told you this, was that when I was a college student, I was living and working in Japan as a college student working in a landscape architecture office, and I walked into those legendary Japanese gardens in Kyoto, and I just felt the stress drop off of me immediately.
Wow.
And I thought, what is this? What? How did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And I spent all these years trying to figure out what techniques did they use that made me feel so good. And that's what I share in my book, Heaven is a Garden.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's so much in there that, and visually, again, I go back to those pictures because, you know, they speak 1,000 words, right?
Yeah.
We do have a question. I do want to get back to, I've got other questions for you, but we do have a question in email that I'll read to you. George has written in, and he said, wow, I've seen some of Jan's work online. What got you into designing and building pools? And then he also wants to know if you built any pools for anybody famous.
Is this George that I might know?
I don't know, George. I don't know. Pesto?
Oh, no, because I had I taught at Columbia University, and I had a wonderful student named George. And I thought, well, maybe George is writing in. How did I get into pools? The way I got into pools was way back, 1979.
Wow.
And a pool was being installed for one of my clients, and then they didn't quite know how to, the pool company didn't quite know how to fit it in, shoehorn it into this property very well. And I came along and said, well, we have to build a wall here, and we have to put some drainage there. And then they saw that they knew how to build the pool shell,
mm-hmm.
and the plumb the equipment, but they didn't really know much about the surroundings. And so that's how I got started with pools in particular. I did study landscape architecture. However, you know, it didn't go into great depth about pools.
Right.
And so from that point forward, I just, I worked originally with pool companies, and then we started our own firm. And pools are the one element where if you're going to put a swimming pool in, and we only do the gunite or the in-ground concrete pools, you know right off the bat that it's not an inexpensive project whatsoever.
Yeah. It's a commitment, yes.
It's a commitment. Mm-hmm. It's like buying another house or something. But at the same time, people are a little bit more open to changing their site in an appreciable way. That, you know, they're like, okay, I'm putting in a pool. I'm probably going to have to cut into the hill over here or add some soil over there. So it gives you a wider latitude in terms of what you can do to the property. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can really create a big change. And, oh, by the way, you get a pool, too.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into pools. I love doing swimming pools. I love that. And, you know, and nowadays with all this modern technology, the saltwater pools and all, I mean, it's really great. It's not like all the chlorine pills of old. And although I have to say that most of my pools now are rectangles, and the reason for that is because of the automatic pool cover.
Oh, yeah. Practical reasons, right? So it makes change the practical things that change design sometimes, right?
No kidding.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I tell people, I say, please do a pool with a pool cover because, you know, it's just the safety is just so assured. You can go away for a week and keep the pool covered. It's locked. Nobody can jump in. It's just, so it's necessity.
Yeah.
And have I done pools for famous people? Oh, yeah, I have. And one who's very, very famous. And then, but I also designed, which I would like to not talk about right now, but very, very famous. And one, Pat Riley, who was the coach of the New York Knicks.
Okay, yep.
And a bunch of other famous
very
people.
Cool.
But
so I'm like such a sports mom, so I'm like, I know who that is, so that's very cool. Although when my boys aren't really into basketball, but I definitely know who that
is.
Well,
he moved down to Miami, so this was when he was up in New York.
Yeah.
And it's always great to work for these well-known people because I study them and I see what was it that made them so successful, you know? And they all have passion, that is for sure. They all have passion for whatever it is that they do.
Oh, that's great.
And they manage somehow to find time to talk to the lowly landscaper as well.
Yeah.
Which is also very nice.
Which is good. Yeah. Well, thank you, George, for that question. And getting back to your book, speaking of power and important people, I wanted to talk, in Heaven is the Garden, you talk about the power spot.
Oh, yeah.
Does every garden have one?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Even the front yard.
Even the front yard. Oh, okay. And even like a tiny postage stamp yard like mine, because I have a very tiny yard.
Do you really? Yeah.
You see, what the power spot is, is a place that feels a little bit different than any other place in that area that you're addressing, whether it's the front yard or the backyard, and it can be small or it could be very big. And I And what I say is that it just has a little bit of a different feeling than any other place. It's not some kind of weird woo-woo thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more just a feeling.
Okay.
And as I explained in the book, it could be a high point.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't made any of this up. This is all like I've taken this from ancient traditions, like Celtic and Hawaiian and Japanese and South American and African and Indian, but they all have these same approaches to the site and to the earth. And so it could be a higher point,
okay.
Even if it's just, say, maybe 18 inches higher than the surrounding area or 5 feet higher than the surrounding
mm-hmm.
area.
Okay.
Or it could be a low point, which I call like the heart of the garden.
Oh, okay.
And you say, well, I don't know where it is. And I say to people, it's your choice. There's no right answer.
Oh,
if you
really?
Say
okay.
That mm-hmm. tree stump over there is the power spot. Well, by golly, that's the power spot.
Okay.
You know, it's not an exam. It's how you approach it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is there something people can do to enhance it, or do you try to do that
yes.
in your design to enhance it?
Yes.
Yes.
Now I'm going to. I have a chart here that says
ooh.
Different ways to enhance the power spot. One of the things that you can do is to name it, like the old oak.
Oh, okay.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
7 ways to highlight a power spot. So one thing is to name it, and the lonesome oak. Another is to mark the spot, like put a piece of artwork there or a standing stone.
Okay.
Or a sign or some kind of marker. Another thing you could do in your power spot is put a bench. And of course, you know, make it easy to get to. If you've determined that it's back there, you know, past the big leaf pile or whatever, maybe make a strip of mown grass that, you know, gets you to there, a stepping stone walk or something.
Yeah.
And then maybe add seasonal interest to the area, like some beautiful grasses that in the fall look so gorgeous, plant them right around there, or add some color like coleus or flowers. And
okay.
And you could even light it up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, anything.
Yep.
Put a, you know, it's just put some steps leading to it. Just make it something a little bit special.
So you, like, I picture that then being almost the destination, you know, like, or one of those secret, like, either not necessarily a secret garden, but a secret spot in your garden, maybe?
Yeah. Now, in my little backyard, I can't do that because it's such a small spot, but what I did was I put a red-leaf Japanese maple there, and then I put a little stone sculpture next door to it.
Okay.
So your eye just tends to go right to that place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I think you've just highlighted what I could picture mine in my backyard now, I'm thinking. Yep.
It's okay. Usually like where you can have a view of something. Like with me, it was a view of the house because I didn't want us to have a view of the neighbors. So we look back with the view of the house, and then I put some bushes behind that point, and I placed a bench.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's good. And so in the front of the yard, you know, your typical, I mean, it's the front can be so functional, right? You've got the driveway,
yeah.
You've got the front walkway, that type of thing. So,
you know what I did for my, I have a very small front, I have a little front walkway, and then I put a little standing Buddha statue about 2.5 feet tall right where the point was.
Okay.
And it was just like, no, I don't say anything to anybody. I just put that there, and then that's it.
Yeah. Okay. So that enhanced it. Yeah. That enhanced it for you. Wonderful. Yeah, the book covers so much. It really does. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
so
I know. I really, like, for such a small book, I really try to make it every page worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. And I feel like I'm going to give away everything because of how much we're going to talk about it. But hopefully that'll make everybody go out and buy it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really written for someone like yourself who's a designer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really wanted to make it helpful.
And there, and it really, as a designer, it is really hard to find a book like this. So I think that's, you know, I think that's why it's so wonderful, is because, you know, we can find books on plants and we can find books on, you know, water guard, like specific things. But something that covers this and all the different, especially since our world is so international now, right? We're I'm designing for people from all different backgrounds.
I bet.
Yeah. So to have this to draw from that is, I think, a really wonderful tool. So I'm looking forward to, I've got a really good friend who's a fellow landscape designer. So I'm really looking forward to getting it for her for Christmas. So
hopefully, so great.
Hopefully she's not listening, but yeah. So,
because
I think it's going to be a great gift. So for our listeners, if you have a garden designers or and just anybody who loves to garden, this is a really special book. So
thanks so much, Joanne.
You're welcome.
You know, it was very hard for me to get it published, because it didn't fall into that standard category of, you know, best plants for a sunny backyard or something like that, you know?
Yes.
And they were like, well, what is it about? I said, well, it's all about ancient traditions and how you can use them to create a serene outdoor space. And it's like, what?
What does that mean? Oh, goodness. So one of the other major topics in the book is you talk about direction. And you place an important part in how it places an important part in the landscape. Which of the four cardinal directions is considered the most auspicious and why?
Now, you know, when I have a PowerPoint talk. And this is one of the things I mention. And I say that all the ancient traditions ascribe the same qualities to the four cardinal directions. So they all said the same thing about the direction of north or of south, east and west, which really was an eye-opener to me. And, for example, north, which is the shady side of a building or the shady side of a mountain, north has always been considered by all traditions to be the quiet side, the side of wisdom and contemplation. And that makes sense. It's shady, it's quiet, so that things that are solid, like boulders and rocks, here I go back to rocks again, and art pieces and viewing gardens belong on the north side of a building.
Okay.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it really does.
A flower garden, you know, with bright colors in a shady north side.
Right, it's not going to work, yes.
And the beauty of the north side is that the sun is behind you, right? Like when you're looking to the north, the sun is behind you and can actually act as a spotlight onto whatever it is that you're looking at.
Wow, never thought of it like that.
Which makes very good for viewing gardens. So anyway, so north is the quiet, meditative, contemplative side, and then south being the sunny side and being brightly lit during midday is the expansive direction, and that's where all the flowers are singing and the banners are up, and it's the fire is the element for the south, so you have fire pits there. And I often say in my talks that it's no accident that the South Lawn of the White House is the side for all the big outdoor events. But the question you asked me was the auspicious direction.
Yes.
And that is the east side.
Is it really?
And people say, well, that makes sense. That's where the sun rises. And so, therefore, everybody loves the east. And they're right.
Okay.
Absolutely true. But the other thing is that when the sun rises, the sun rays are very gentle. And the plants are just waking up the way we wake up in the morning.
Yep.
And it's those gentle rays of the sun that wake up the plants. And that's when they do their most growth.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because, you know, they've spent all night respiring and doing all that metabolizing, and then they grow.
Wow.
And so a wise gardener's secret is to have your vegetable garden make sure it gets eastern light as well as southern light.
Right.
Make sure it gets the eastern light, because that's what starts the growth process.
Starts the growth process.
And one more thing about mm-hmm. east is that when we face east, the synapses in our brain fire more rapidly, and which means that we think a little bit more clearly and rapidly.
Really? Facing east, just because of in the morning, like kind of a morning time?
Well, I think it's because of the spinning of the earth, geomagnetics, but Vastu, which is the Indian version of feng shui,
okay.
Vastu says that east is the most auspicious direction, and they say your gates and the front of your house should face east, and all the Gothic cathedrals have their congregations face east, and all the great old libraries of the world, the windows face east.
Wow.
And if you think about the word orientation, like when you orient a building, you know what orient mm-hmm. means?
Yeah.
East.
East. Wow.
Orient means east.
Does it really? Okay, so I guess I didn't know that. Wow.
Occident is west and orient is
east.
So when they talk about orientation, what they're saying to you is that you've got to face east.
Face east.
And west, by the way, I should finish with west. West is the direction associated with the setting of the sun and the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the direction where we gather with friends and talk about small groups and talk about what went on that day. And you have the sunset terrace, and that's where people seem to gather.
Gathering, yeah. So again, kind of a gathering spot.
A small gathering,
small
as opposed
gathering.
To the south, which is big group.
Right.
And west is a small terrace area, yeah.
Wow, that's great. I guess if the front of the house faces east and the back is facing west.
Yeah, it's perfect.
You know, and then, when you think of small groups with dinner or in the evening, that's wonderful. That
yeah.
is great.
I mean, it's all common sense mm-hmm. if you think about it, mm-hmm. but, you know, when you put it into a whole understanding, it
yeah.
really does work.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, the chart your chart is in the book, right?
Yes.
Yes.
It is.
So that really helps as well,
yeah.
For people because I think people think of direction just strictly sometimes as like exposure. You know, how much sun is each spot going to get, right?
Right, because that's how we've been taught.
Yes.
You know, sun and shade patterns.
Yes.
You know, it was kind of taken into this very, very functional aspect, and it, you should, you know, okay, this plant needs
mm-hmm.
you know, 6 hours sun a day, and but when you put it into context, it's a little bit more holistic.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we have another question, Jan.
Okay.
Nan has written in, and she's asking if you do work outside of New York.
Yeah, sure.
She lives in Arizona.
Oh, Nan, I'm coming.
That's cool.
I'm doing a project right now in Maryland that's right next to West Virginia. Who knew?
Okay.
Maryland was right next but right in that panhandle part of Maryland in West Virginia. And I've lived and worked in various parts. I didn't say that I lived in Hawaii and worked in Hawaii. I live in New Orleans and worked in a landscape architecture office in New Orleans. And so, Nan, yes, I do.
Wonderful.
I go all over.
And she's asking also, what is the biggest rock that you have worked with?
Rock.
Yes.
The biggest rock. Well, that's a great segue to my upcoming book.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah, thank you, Nan. It's called The Spirit of Stone, and it's about creative uses of natural stone in the landscape. And so I'm all about rocks right now.
Excellent.
You know?
Excellent.
I'm very stoned, as they say.
That'll get you some press.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's what I should. I should think of a motto,
there
a tagline.
And when does that come out? So
it comes out. Okay, you can pre-order it on Amazon right now. The Spirit of Stone.
Okay.
And but it does come out in mid-February. St. Lin's Press.
Excellent. Excellent. And Heaven is a Garden is also published by St. Lin's Press,
yeah, they're
correct?
A great,
excellent.
Great publishing house. Just,
excellent.
I can't say enough good things about them.
Oh, that's good. Well, if they saw, you know, like you said, you had a hard time, and then they saw it and ran with it, then I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, that really is a testament to
mm-hmm.
Paul Kelly, who runs the company. He just he took the chance, and it's now in its third printing.
So. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. But the largest rock I've ever worked with. Wow, that's a very exciting question. You know, I work with a lot of rock outcrops because where I live in Westchester County, and I also worked in Hawaii, you know, years back.
Mm, yeah.
I worked with some lava rock in the and in this mountain range there in Oahu. But, golly, I'm not sure about the largest. It's very large, right?
Yes. Yeah.
There's several here in this my part of the world where they just had such a presence about them. And you have to acknowledge them, you know. The Native Americans would refer to the large boulders as grandfather or aged one.
Really?
And okay. I can identify with that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
They've seen so much.
Yeah, definitely. Aged one. You could definitely. That's a good name for a power spot, right?
Yeah. There you go. That's the name.
I'm getting this. I'm getting it.
You're getting into it.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you for your question, Nan. That's great. So I do want to talk a bit about of a trend here. So, and you talk about, because I know you had said you really like the sweeping curves and that people feel more relaxed and comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But I'm finding there's a little bit of a, like in the sense, and I'll use the word hardscaping design, you know, the paving companies, everybody's kind of going a little bit more linear, right? They're making stone that's bigger and meant to be more linear patterns. So with everything more linear, and you talk in your book about the power of square and rectangle in the landscape.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So as much as the sweeping curves, you know, my eye kind of goes to that myself, although I'm finding, you know, others are wanting more of the linear.
Well, no, you're right. And that's true. We live in a rectangular world. I mean, I'm sitting talking to you, and I'm sitting in a rectangular room. And I don't know anybody who lives in a round or curved house or building. So you're right. We are much more comfortable in a rectangular space because that's what we're familiar with. And rather than fight that, if you're making an outdoor sitting area, it's very comforting for someone to sit in a rectangular sitting spot. And it's easier to place furniture, after all.
Yes.
So when I talk about that here, I say, well, listen, if you're going to work with rectangles in the landscape, you might as well do it with using the golden rectangle. And did you read that part yet?
I did, yeah. And I remember we studied, it's one of those things where I brought it to mind when I read the book because we certainly studied it in school. You know, or I studied it in school. And then I think once you leave school, like you forget about it kind of thing.
Oh, yeah,
like, you know,
absolutely.
You kind of know, but really to keep that top of mind. So you kind of encouraged me to, you know, when I am designing to kind of keep it a bit more top of mind. Is there an easy explanation for our listeners?
Yes, I have a very easy one.
Okay, perfect.
Which I talk about in my talks when I have people. So I explain that the golden proportion, because, you know, outdoor space is all about scale and proportion, first and foremost. The golden proportion is phi, not pi, not 3.14, but phi, 1.618.
Okay.
And phi is like phi beta kappa, you know?
Phi.
Yeah, phi, 1.618 to 1, right? And it is the nature's proportion. Everything in nature grows according to phi.
Wow.
So that if you look at your finger, there's three digits or three joints in your finger. The smallest one and its relationship to the next one is 1.618. And each one is 1.618 times larger than the other. Same with your hand, your forearm, and your upper arm. They're all in phi proportion to one another.
Wow.
And what does that have to do with landscaping?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're so used to seeing the phi proportion in our bodies or in our flowers or in our fruit or in our pine cones or whatever, that we prefer rectangles that are also in the phi proportion. Am I losing you yet?
No, I'm good. I'm hoping everybody else is. And
And so the long side of the rectangle is 1.618 times the short side of the rectangle. And that is called, so like say for example you have the short side being 5 feet, the long side would be around 8 feet.
Okay.
Because that's the phi proportion.
Right.
And when I explain this to people in my talks and I show them pictures and all, I joke around and I say, now, you're going to tell me you'll never remember the golden rectangle because, you know, math is not your thing. And I say to people, I say, but you'll never forget the golden rectangle. And they say, well, how can you be so sure? And I said, because every one of you in your wallet has a golden rectangle in your wallet. And that's because all the credit cards are in the shape of a golden rectangle.
Oh, my goodness. That is interesting.
So you can't forget it.
Yeah.
So then the question is that why we're so comfortable with them? Because the credit cards?
No, yeah. Business cards, too, right?
Oh, I wonder. I never thought about that. I'll have to look.
Because, you know, if someone gives you, the people like to be different, right? And they give you a smaller one or a bigger one or one that's more square and it just doesn't work.
You know, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Oh, that's interesting. We'll have to see.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're going to go rectangular in anything you do, I suggest you at least you consider, you know, utilizing the golden rectangle in your
Design. Excellent. And then that's something, it's easy, you know, you don't have to be a designer to do that, right? If you're, you know, laying out, if our listeners who are creating their own garden beds at home and laying out the hose maybe to market or something like that.
A flower bed.
Yeah.
In my book, I show an illustration of the patio and then I show the flower beds around it that are also in the phi proportion so that it all works.
Yeah. Yep, I have it turned right here, page 39. Yeah. There you go.
And I know that a lot of people, the minute you start talking math, you know, their eyes start to glaze over. Mm. But it's not that, you know, it's just that one measurement that you have to utilize, 1.618.
Yeah, so that's one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Now, we can't finish talking about the book and without talking about a little bit about trees.
Oh, good.
Right? So we got to leave some time. Time is flying. I'm just loving our chat, Jan. So you write in Heaven is the Garden that there is a message in trees.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about trees in the landscape?
You know, there's a fellow right now who's come, a German fellow, and he's just written a book. I cannot remember the name of the man, nor can I remember the name of the book. But it was just recently, and it was about how trees talk to each other and communicate, and everybody is, like, very excited about it. And that's kind of what I talk about in the chapter in Heaven is a Garden called Calling on the Trees. Now, I actually did write a book years ago called Orthos, All About Trees. And you can buy it for a penny Amazon, and it's a great introduction to trees. It's a great compendium of information on all different kinds of trees, and I put charts together about the all-star trees and trees for wet location. I mean, it was a tree book that was really worthwhile.
Wow, so, that's great. I'll look for that.
Yeah, so send your penny in.
I'll send my penny in. Now, because you wrote that a long time ago to now, do you think there have some trees kind of fallen off favor?
Well, you see, that was kind of like an informative book for people to say, okay, what kind of tree should I plant in my front yard? Should it be an oak? Should it be a maple? Should it be a sweet gum? But this particular chapter, you know, it's a little bit different. This chapter is about the energy of the trees. Mm. And I say, you know, may the forest be with you. And it's really addressing the fact, and again, ancient traditions knew this, that trees actually do have different energetic signatures.
Okay.
And the way that you can det- determine that for yourself is simply to put your hands on the trunk of the tree.
Mm.
Now, I have actually done this with people at the New York, students at the New York Botanic Gardens. And, you know, there's always a few that are looking at me askance.
Yeah.
However, if you put your hands on the trunk of a, say, a white pine tree, and then you go over and you put your hands on the trunk of an oak tree, you will absolutely feel a total different energy.
Okay. So it's not just the bark. You're talking energy.
I'm talking about the feeling you get when you put your hands on the trunk of that tree.
Mm.
And it's, I'm not trying to be, you know, a little otherworldly here. I'm just saying you will feel it.
Mm.
It's you know, it's kind of like when you're around one person and then you go to next to another person and you feel a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing. And once we start to recognize that, we will understand why the Native Americans called the white pine the tree of peace, which they did.
Okay.
And then, of course, you think about it. What are the qualities that people ascribe to, say, an oak tree? They say courage and steadfastness,
yeah,
and vigorous and strong. I mean, that's what everybody thinks of when,
yeah,
they think of an oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so I just talk a little bit about some of the trees, like willow trees. They're very soft and they're very pliable, and they actually assist in healing. And like I said, with pines, they are very uplifting, peaceful, and they aid in problem solving if you're near them.
Yeah.
And maple trees, well, they just engender goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make this up, by the way.
Okay.
I got this from various
lots of research. Yeah, it's obvious in your book that,
yeah,
you know, a lot of research went into this. Like, you know, the principles that you're practicing in your career, but also that the history you've definitely outlined and really referenced that. So I think that's wonderful.
And, you know, when I, in my book, and I'll just leave it at this for the trees, Thomas Hardy wrote in this book called Under the Greenwood Tree, he wrote, "To dwellers in a wood, almost every species of tree has its voice as well as its features."
Mm.
And we all know about the features. We, you know, we, that's what my first book was,
mm-hmm,
about. This is more about it, the voice.
The voice.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So should we expect the same in the spirit of stone? Should we expect the same research about stone and the different parts of the world?
Yeah, kind of. I talk about how to utilize a natural stone in the garden. And, you know, when I started in on this, I thought, well, this won't be that big an undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was silly, because the more I saw how much stone can be utilized, I thought, wow, there's so much to discuss here. And from stone accents to stone walks to stone walls to the traditional uses of stone as totems and you know, in labyrinths and,
oh yeah, labyrinths,
medicine wheels,
yeah.
And but then, you know, all the way to plants and stone. I have a whole chapter saying how, you know, plants and stone, it's kind of like yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stone is the hard, enduring material, and then the plants are the dynamic, growing and aging material right next to it. It's,
yeah,
a great dynamic combination.
Yeah, for sure. Well, wow, we're really going quickly here. Time is spinning, but I didn't before we leave. We've talked about both the books, but I did want to give a shout out to your company, so Johnson Landscape and Pools in Westchester County, New York.
But and we work anywhere.
You do work anywhere, okay?
Is anywhere.
It? Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, do you fly out to see the property?
I fly out.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's it. And we do what they call a charrette, which is we measure it and shoot all the elevations. Everything I do very detailed. There's no guesswork.
Mm.
So we use the transit to shoot the elevations, and we develop the plan, and then go from there.
Now, would you install, like, is that mostly from a design standpoint? So
it just depends. I mean, yeah. If it doesn't make sense, then we'll just manage the project and work very closely. Because, you know, you could make the most beautiful drawing in the world. If you don't have the craftsmanship to follow it up, then...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. And it really involves a partnership, too, right? You need to work with not only good craftsmen and good people, but they need to be able to see the value in the design and work closely. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when they start to realize that I've calculated all the grades and the pitches and all this other stuff, they realize, oh, wait a second, this person really did address everything.
Ah.
Of course, it also helps to know Spanish. You got to know Spanish in this profession.
Yes.
Joanne.
Yeah. Well, not up here, but.
Oh, that's right. Not in Canada.
No.
That's true.
Not in Canada.
Yeah. Where I live, I got to speak Spanish every day.
Yeah. Well, that's good that you know it, though.
Yeah, it's good.
We need workers here. That is one of our challenges, is workers.
And I bet.
Because the kids, you know, I have two myself, and it's hard work. It's a very rewarding field, but it is a lot of hard work.
It's hard work.
And the next generation doesn't necessarily want to work that hard.
No, I don't know if they know what hard work is.
Yeah, so that is definitely one of the big challenges with all the contractors up here is finding and retaining.
Getting the work done.
Yeah, definitely getting the work done.
You could get me started on that because I cannot believe that for all these years the school systems did not teach this because it is such a rewarding profession.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to build a stone wall and stand back and look at your creation and, you know, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. No, and all of the other trades, too. I mean, it's definitely whoever made that decision years and years ago to take that out I think we're really going to be paying the price going forward, unless they can turn things around. But
I think so, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you, so the gardens that are close to you, do you maintain them also for your clients?
Well, we do, actually.
We do
maintain the gardens that we have installed.
Okay.
We didn't start out that way, but again, it was one of those things where, you know, at least, in areas here nearby where we just said, well, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. They don't even know how to prune. They don't know how to deadhead. They don't know how to do anything. And we trained some of our top guys and have them run the maintenance. Of course, I can always talk to someone else, too. And they'll... I write down exactly what has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not my crews, I write down what they have to do.
They have to do. That's great.
And we have whole plan sheets and everything that we give to the client.
Oh, wonderful.
When we do a plan, I don't know if you do this, we actually have, when we do a plant list, and then we give a little information with a picture of every plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps.
Yes. And do you do care, like a care info too to go with it, or okay, excellent. So in addition to writing books, you have a popular blog called Serenity in the Garden. So our listeners can follow you there, and you're on other social media links, right?
I'm on Facebook.
Excellent.
I'm a Facebook junkie. And I have two Facebook pages. One is called Heaven is a Garden.
Okay.
And the other is called Serenity in the Garden blog.
Excellent.
And that's on Facebook. And
I just
find it so great because then we start talking. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll post something and then somebody will say, oh, I have that in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And actually it's hardier than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I just think Facebook is the greatest thing.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And I noticed you also share some things from Facebook to Instagram and Twitter. So
and Twitter, yes.
Yeah.
Twitter, that's how I communicate with you.
Yes.
Twitter.
Yep.
Right.
And
there's different people, different groups of people in the world. There's the Twitter people, there's the Instagram people, and there's the Facebook people.
Yes.
You know, it's all different tribes.
That's right. And it's hard. It takes so much time, right, to kind of inform all of them. So,
Then my friends say, well, I text message you. I said, I don't have time to look at my text messages.
I find that about Facebook Messenger. Like, I'm good with Facebook, but then you threw me a curve. Like, you know, the Facebook Messenger is just one more thing.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
That's what I did, right? I wrote, right, I know. Sorry about that. Yeah.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
So is there anything else? I know you also have quite a schedule on your website there about upcoming speaking engagements. So is there anything else coming up that you'd like to promote?
The one thing I would like to say is that I do love to give talks. And I'm going down to Dallas in 2 weeks to give a talk there, and I'm going out to Seattle next year to give a talk there. And so if anybody's interested in having me come give a PowerPoint presentation or a workshop, they can go on to my company website, which is johnsonlandscapes.com.
Okay.
And Johnsen is with an E.
That's right.
S-E-N, johnsonlandscapes.com, and contact me there.
Okay.
For any kind of speaking engagement, which I really enjoy.
You really do that. I don't know how you get it all in.
Well, you know, it's funny. I really don't know how I'm doing it either, but it's kind of like a labor of love.
Mm.
It's something I just feel that it's time.
Excellent.
You know, after 40 years, it's time to share it all.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I really hope that you'll come back when we get
the new book.
Yeah, the new book.
Yeah, I'll send you a review copy.
Excellent.
And
thank you.
Do it again. I'd love to.
That would be great. That'd be great. Although, I mean, you're welcome on the show anytime.
Well,
so anything else you ever want to share or want to talk about, just give me a call and you can definitely, you know where I am on Monday night. So
thanks so much, Joanne.
Love to spend it with you. And I hope our listeners enjoyed listening in. I will send you the links, too, when they're up on my website. So thank you once again, Jan, for joining us here on Down the Garden Path.
Okay,
and
everybody,
we'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye. Well, there you have it, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Jan Johnson. And please do check out her book, Heaven is a Garden, St. Lynn's Press. Beautiful photos.
Yes.
Yeah, and really well done. So I'm really looking forward to The Spirit and the
When's
Stone.
When's your book coming out?
Yeah, no. You say that every once in a while.
You should.
Yes, yes. Well, you come up with the topic for me. And,
I got great topics.
Do you have great topics? Yes. So it was very nice. I know we talk about a lot of different things here on Down the Garden Path. Last week's our October tips. And but it's, you know, this is my first, Jan was my first landscape designer that's been on the show. So we've had her on twice, almost back to back, to really talk about the industry and her design theories. And I think that's, I'm really excited after 2 years, almost 2 years, Gary, of the show.
Let me know what that date is so we can have cake.
Yeah, we can have cake. We can talk about that. So. So thank you, everybody, for listening once again to Down the Garden Path here on Reality Radio 101. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.